A warning, this episode contains discussion of suicide and domestic violence. The first thing you should know about Alex Garland's new movie, Men, is that, spoiler alert, yes, there are men. And not a few good men, but plenty of unsettling ones.
But at the center of this horrifyingly gruesome story is the great Jessie Buckley. She plays a woman whose only wish is to relax in the countryside following a traumatic event. Unfortunately, her getaway turns dark real quick as her past and present collide to haunt her holiday. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Aisha Harris. And today we're talking about men on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Also with us is NPR producer Mallory Yu. Welcome back, Mallory.
Hey, guys. It's good to be back.
Awesome. It's great to have you. So in Men, Jessie Buckley plays Harper, whose estranged husband, James, played by Papa Essiadu, has recently died in a horrific manner. To decompress, she rents out a quiet, stately home in the English countryside from Jeffrey, who's played by Rory Kinnear. Now, it doesn't take long before her trip is disturbed by increasingly strange and invasive occurrences, including this naked wanderer who emerges from the woods. In addition to the role of Jeffrey, Kinnear plays many of the other men Harper encounters during her stay, like a police officer, a priest, and that naked wanderer in the woods. And Gail Rankin plays Riley, Harper's friend who checks in with her from time to time over the phone. The movie was written and directed by Alex Garland, whose previous features include Ex Machina and Annihilation. Now, there are a ton of details I haven't even gotten into because they could arguably be considered spoilers. So after we share our general sentiments, we're going to give a warning right before moving into a more spoiler-filled discussion. You can come back to us later if you want to wait before seeing it first. And I think I highly recommend waiting before you listen to this because it's so spoilery, right?
Yep.
So spoilery. So let's get into our general feelings first. Glenn, talk to me.
All right. Well, this might be the gayest take, but I do have to get out of the way up top. I love the knitwear in this film. I love the sweaters. I love the apartment. I mean, the house itself is a little fusty for me, but it's got potential. You know, you rip down a few walls, get the grandma out of it, get rid of those anti-Macassars.
Sure.
I'd go for it.
Yeah.
I love how this film takes its time becoming what it ultimately is about. You can feel the moment when it crosses over from being concerned with evoking some very real fears that women live with every day, when they walk down the street at night, when they're alone at home, those fears. And then it goes bigger into something heightened and very symbolic. You can feel that click when it switches over. And then what I like about it, too, is that once you get what it's doing, the film knows that you get what it's doing, and it has some fun with it. It's just funny to see Rory Kinnear in a wig. It's funny to see Rory Kinnear de-aged in that kind of creepy Captain America way.
CGI way.
Yeah.
But even then, you could think you're in for some kind of conventional folk horror film where all the townspeople are related or something. But no, there's something else at work here. And that's what I think is fascinating about the movie, because that's the moment when the film splits, or at least the journey that the viewer goes on splits. There's two ways of looking at this, right? On the surface, we seem to be seeing something she isn't. All these dudes are the same guy. Why isn't she reacting to that? Why doesn't she see that? That's one track. Or it could be equally possible that we are seeing everything through her eyes, right? And all these dudes look the same to her. Mm-hmm. Those are two very different tracks that the film kind of splits into, and the choice you make which track to follow changes how the film reads. I just find that fascinating. So I dug it.
Yeah. I'm glad you tapped into the humor of it too, because this is definitely horrific. It's got some like Cronenberg level body horror going on here.
Definitely.
But it also does have some funny, off-putting Jordan Peele-ish moments as well. So yeah, I'm glad you pointed to that. Mallory, how about you?
So I went into this wanting a few things: spooky, unsettling vibes, maybe some body horror, and that kind of Alex Garland aesthetic, shall we say. And I got all of that. I had a lot of fun with this movie. It did take me a little while to decide whether I actually liked it, and I think I did. The cast is really great. Jessie Buckley and Rory Kinnear both feel fully committed. I will say, like you said, Aisha, this is definitely one where it's good to go in as cold as possible, because otherwise some of these like reveals just won't work. It's also a movie that I felt was intentionally opaque for quite a bit of the movie, and I think that could lose some audiences. Mm-hmm. But like Glenn, I really enjoyed the time Garland takes to kind of pull out what is unsettling about the story. Is it unsettling because she's the only woman in this like tiny English town, or is it unsettling because there's something deeper going on? I thought the cinematography was really lush and beautiful, just as creepy as it was in Annihilation, but in a completely different way. Mm. And I think my personal favorite aspect of this movie was the sound design and the Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury soundtrack with all the kind of creepy choral singing and vocalizations, the chanting. It really let me sink into the movie. And I will say, sitting in a theater with a surround sound system really got me into the ambiance of the film. If you like Alex Garland's other stuff, and if going to a movie theater is within your acceptable risk parameters, shall we say, I would say this is worth seeing in a theater.
Yeah. The sound design was actually going to be the thing that I pointed out, because that, for me, was the thing that worked the most. There's this amazing sequence early on in the film where the Harper character is just walking by herself in the woods, and she encounters this, I guess, what do you call it? Like an underpass, sort of? Or
yeah, it's like an unused train tunnel.
Exactly. It's like a tunnel. And she spends several minutes just like making vocal sounds and then hearing the sounds echo back and then layering them over with a harmony and a melody. And it's just the fact that Alex Garland, really just lets us seep into this for a very long time, I think works really well. And then the sounds come back throughout the rest of the film mm-hmm. in ways that are sometimes haunting, sometimes piercing. Like, it really works so well. My only caveat, I wish that, unfortunately, in my screening, we had some bleed sound over from the theater next to us that might have been the Northmen. I'm not sure, because I just heard a lot of rah, like literally men yelling. Yeah. And I haven't seen the Northmen, but I know that bet, that happened. Yeah. Yep. And it kind of took me out of it a little bit, but not enough. I think the sound design was so powerful that even with that sound bleed, I was still able to get myself back in every time that thing drew me out. But I also felt like you, Mallory, where I really loved a lot of moments from it, and I thought all the performances were great. And by the end of it, I was just aghast. Like, what has just happened? This is wild. My mind is blown. I didn't know where it was going, and I appreciated that. But I also felt at the end of it, as though, even though I haven't seen it in this way, I've seen all of the points made, or I kind of knew the points that it was trying to make. And I think for me, it works definitely as an experience to watch in that moment. But thinking about it more afterwards, I just couldn't bring myself to feel as though it was necessarily doing anything new thematically. Now, visually, yes. Like, I think that aesthetically, it is astounding. Your mind will be blown if you're not also like getting sick to your stomach a little bit. But like, it felt almost slight to me in a way. And I also feel like the way it kind of leans on trauma sometimes felt a little squicky. And we can talk about that a little bit more later. But like the trauma part of it, I'm not sure I needed all of that in order to get what the rest of the film was trying to do, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I would agree. I think my, I guess, biggest criticism was that by three quarters of the movie in, I was like, okay, I need Harper to be a little bit less passive. Like, I need her to start becoming the quote-unquote final girl in a horror movie. But then I don't think that that's what Alex Garland wanted us to take away from this. Like, she's not supposed to be the final girl in a slasher movie, necessarily. And right. I kind of had to let go of my own expectations of what I wanted this character to be an act in the movie before I could really engage with, especially the like latter quarter of it.
Yeah, I picked up on something similar. It seems to me that the work this film wants to do would be greatly helped if all of the work of humanizing and delineating the character of Harper as a whole rounded person herself wasn't all put on the shoulders of Jesse Buckley. Who's great. She's doing great. But she's kind of defined by her marriage. She gets a mention or two of how she affords that amazing apartment. But yeah. Her role here is to be reactive, and her role here is to be silent and reflective, and I get that. And I was reminded of that supercut of Jamie Lee Curtis on the press junket telling all the various interviewers what the latest Halloween movie is about. It's trauma. It's trauma. Well, this one's about trauma. It's about trauma. That seems to me to be a shortcut to get your main character to a place of vulnerability and openness to the uncanny and the weirdness. But at this point, I mean, we can take off those training wheels, right? It's become the prestige horror equivalent of kids having sex in a slasher movie, right? It's gone from being a hallmark to being a cliche. Anytime there's a prestige horror, you know you're going to be dealing with trauma.
Right.
And I feel as though with Harper and knowing all we know, just being a woman generally, like you don't necessarily have to go through this intense trauma in order to be terrified of all these other things. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I think that's a good point, Glenn. I think that the trauma is just, it is a cliche at this point, and not just in horror, in like every aspect of pop culture at this moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this film needed it. So I think we've tap danced around this enough at this point. We can get into the more spoilery aspects of the film. So coming up, we're going to talk about the ending of the movie. That spoiler discussion is up next. Okay, so we're back. We've got our spoiler-filled segment. Now, in flashbacks, we learn Harper wanted to divorce James, and in their final conversation, he threatened suicide in order to make her feel guilty. He also smacked her, and she forced him out of their London flat. Moments later, she witnessed him fall to his death right outside the window. While staying in the countryside, the naked wanderer stalks Harper, and after he attempts to break into the house, he's arrested but quickly released. She also meets a weird priest who tells her she's responsible for James's death. An angry young man boy man, I don't know. It's like, it's Rory Kinnear de-aged with his face, but on a boyish body, who wears a creepy face mask of a blonde woman. And these characters, as well as Jeffrey and a police officer, all descend upon the house one by one in the film's final act. And things get bloodier and more gruesome from there. So, what do we make of all of this?
I really loved that ending, like, I guess, climactic birthing scene, shall we say? Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really interesting culmination of all the reproductive imagery that Garland is kind of jamming into our eyes through the whole movie. And it's really sort of bloody and violent. And it feels like, I was going to say, there were parts of it that made me really uncomfortable. I started fidgeting. I started looking away. And I was like, you know, I never want to give birth. Like, I never want to go through this experience. This is quite enough. Thank you very much, Alex Garland. And then it keeps going and going.
It's like a Russian doll, like a little Russian doll.
Where, like, a fleshy, bloody Russian doll.
I just appreciated that Alex Garland went there. I appreciated that he was just like, I'm going to go gonzo. What is the thing that is going to make every person in this audience squirm in their seats? Here it is. And he just kind of dumps it at you. I went into this so cold, though. I will say that I didn't know that Rory Kinnear was every single character.
I didn't either.
Okay.
I was in the same boat, yeah.
I was like, everyone is a very specific type of toxic man that he's embodying. And my skin is crawling from the very first words out of his mouth. And then it was amazing to see how my skin would crawl in a completely different way with every character that he played. Mm. And he was so good at first that I was like, okay, did you manage to get a priest who looks very similar to Rory Kinnear? Or is this actually the same person? And it wasn't until that horrific CGI boy man thing showed up that it went from like everybody looks unsettlingly similar to, OMG, they're all the same people. What the heck is happening? That was the point where I thought Alex Garland was really trying to, like, pull open what he was trying to say with this tiny, tiny world that he's built.
Yeah. For me, you know, a big figure in this film is the figure of the Green Man, which is a folklore creation that's a creature of rebirth and harvest and bounty. And he's not necessarily a sinister figure traditionally. But I thought to myself, if you go into the woods where the Green Man resides, carrying enough guilt and shame that you are shutting yourself off from his thing, which is rebirth and healing, then maybe he'd become a little less green and a little bit more man, right? And he'd become a little bit more corrupt and insistent and violent. And so that's how it worked for me. When you're dealing with a big symbolic theme like this, it can become really one note and oppressive. The way you avoid that is the particulars, paying attention to the particulars. And every little microaggression that she suffers from all these different dudes is so well observed and so smart and specific, so that these different Rory Kinnears become different darker aspects of masculinity. There's needfulness, there's violence, there's manipulation. And there is, of course, a very basic biblical symbolism here with the apple tree, which I wasn't nuts about. That sort of reminded me of Mother! Exclamation point.
Yes.
But that film, all it was the allegory. Once you figured out the allegory, the biblical allegory in that film, you had the key in the lock, you solved the puzzle, you decoded the code, and it didn't have anything else to say except the allegory. What I like about this is it's not simply dealing in allegory, but in illusion, right? So allegory shuts things down. Illusion opens things up. So that tunnel you mentioned, that's doing a lot of different kinds of work. The tree isn't just Adam and Eve. It's also about crossing into fairy. And when you do that and you eat or drink something in fairy, then you're stuck there forever. So to me, that is not, some people are going to say that's ambiguousness, and I hate this. I think that's ambivalence. I think that's, you can choose the path you're on.
Yeah.
I like how it resists the most reductive take again and again. I do think if Harper was a stronger character, that would help that. But I think the ending, the very ending, is unsatisfying in that we don't see her get her bloody revenge. The monster is revealed to be the spirit of her husband, this pathetic thing, and he's sitting there on that couch, naked and sad and needy. They were planting the seeds for that all along. Planting the seeds. But that's what the film wants to be the victory, right? It's saying, look, you know she cuts off his penis and stuffs it in his mouth. We set that up earlier. We don't need to show you that. And it would be really gross to show us that. I'm not sure if the ending it chose, which is to kind of make that be as read and to have the victory be how sad and pathetic he is, I'm not sure if that worked 100% for me. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I struggled with that ending too. And I think it's also linked to sort of, Mallory, what you were mentioning earlier about Harper feeling passive. I wouldn't say she felt necessarily passive to me so much as she was kind of by the end of it, just so over it. And just like, look, if we're going to do this, let's do this. Like, I will tango, but let's just get this over with. I'm tired of being haunted by your spirit. I'm tired of how much control you seem to have over my psyche. And I just want to let it out. And I kind of liked that part of it. I didn't necessarily need to see her be like rah 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 at the end. I just kind of like that she was just like, whatever. Whatever. Like, the final line is like, James is sitting next to her on the couch and she asks him, what do you want from me? He says, your love. And she's just like, yeah. And it's ambiguous. And I think the weird thing about this movie is that it does live, it is both literal and vague in many ways. And like, your mileage may vary on this aspect. I think that I probably could have used a little bit less literalness and more ambiguity. And I really wanted to, if not see her destroy her husband or whatever she did at the end, I did want to see just sort of any sense of, okay, where does she go from here? And I'm not sure that is depicted in that final moment where she's looking at her friend who has finally arrived too late. But I kind of wanted a sense of like, how has she changed? Because I didn't really necessarily get the sense that she had changed. I just thought, oh, she's just over it now. And that's not quite the same as being either like feeling as though you can go out and conquer the world now or feeling defeat. Like, I just wanted a little bit more of, okay, what about her has really, really changed inside? And that to me was what was missing.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I actually really liked the ending once I kind of thought about it and wrestled with it a little more. I thought the fact that this gross creature ends up like birthing the spirit of her husband to me was this idea of how toxic masculinity breeds itself and like keeps kind of finding ways to reinvent itself. And toxic masculinity has many faces, but it all kind of comes from the same gross swamp. So to me, it was about Harper's realization that the source of her guilt is part and parcel with these invasive creatures around her who are kind of trying to control her life or pull her into their clutches or something. And I liked that she was just so pitying of him. I didn't necessarily need her to like cut his head off or anything, but I did really appreciate that through this movie, this person lost his power over her. And by the end, she was not scared of him. She was not necessarily that she wasn't traumatized by him, but his power over her and the power of like her guilt and his traumatic end does not have as strong of a grasp on her. She's still a traumatized person who now maybe knows that she has some sense of power over this memory of hers and can maybe live with it in a way. So that's what I found satisfying. But I also didn't necessarily need the domestic violence. I felt like their conversations together were abusive and manipulative enough that I really didn't need to see that very real depiction of actual violence as opposed to like horror, bloody violence. I didn't need it to be in my face. Mm-hmm. I would have been totally okay and picked up on it enough with just the first kind of few scenes with him.
So before we wrap up, this is Alex Garland's third directorial feature following Ex Machina and Annihilation. I'm curious what you all think about, you know, where this sits within those other films and what the experience was like for you having seen those other films.
Yeah, I mean, I've basically seen all of Alex Garland's work at this point, which I can't say about very many directors. I loved Ex Machina. Annihilation is one that I will just kind of put on if I'm feeling sad or whatever, which I know.
to feel more sad?
To feel more sad, yes. Okay. Sometimes you just need some feel-bad media, and Alex Garland is really good at that.
Look, I hear you.
Sometimes a mutant bear will help.
I thought this was a really interesting progression of his other work, and I've kind of been thinking about it in relation to Devs, which was his show on Hulu, which came out, I think, in 2020. A lot of the cinematography is really similar. Obviously, it's Alex Garland's like aesthetic. So there's that kind of visual symmetry. But there's also like a juxtaposition between the way Alex Garland is like playing with the idea of the limits of technology and man's relationship to technology with Devs. And in this one, it's kind of like man's relationship to nature and rebirth and using similar imagery to say completely different things. I've been really chewing on it, and I like how I can see parallels and reflections of his previous work, but I'm also seeing Garland kind of challenging himself. I think my biggest criticism of his other stuff has been that I find his female characters to be a little bit one-dimensional, or like I would like to see more depth to them. And I feel with this movie, he's really trying to give us that. And whether he's, I'm not sure if he's 100% successful, but I do appreciate seeing him kind of like pushing past the bounds of what I see as his biggest weakness.
And real quick, I'll just say that of the Alex Garland properties I've seen, Devs was the one that left me coldest. And I think it's not a coincidence that it's also, you know, the longest, it's a series, and the talkiest. I think he's at his best when he cuts back and lets the images do a lot of the work. And when that show was as expository as it was, you kind of noticed flaws that you wouldn't necessarily notice when you get him in concentrated form like you do here.
Yeah, I do think that what I really want and expect from an Alex Garland film at this point is those visuals that make you just like stare in awe or make you feel just either like you might throw up or like you might. I really like those visuals. I also think of that moment in Annihilation with the, I don't even really know what was going on there, but There was another like sound rich moment where it was just kind of a hologram. Am I remembering this correctly?
Yes.
Whatever that thing
that
was.
That alien.
The
creature.
Alien thing. I love those moments. And I think if I had to say what my favorite of his films so far are that he's directed, it would be Annihilation. But I do think like the Rory Kinnear character here might be my favorite out of all of his, just because, again, he's just doing some fantastic work here that is astonishing to watch, and I loved it. So we obviously talked a lot about Men. We want to Men the movie, of course, and men in general, but we want to know what you think about Men as well. Find us at facebook.com/pchh and on Twitter at pchh. And that brings us to the end of our show. Glenn Weldon, Mallory Yu, thanks to you both for being here and helping me decipher as much as I could this really weird movie.
It was a blast.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Anna Isaacs and edited by Mike Katziff. And Hello Come In provides music you're bobbing your head to right now. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we'll be talking about the return of Kids in the Hall.